nasty ass mayonnaise whatever sandwich.
That was enough to get it an R, I think. That scene alone.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins from All the Things.
Hello, hello.
Yep, and we're going to be doing a mini pod.
Sorority pod? Christmassy pod?
Yeah, maybe. I guess so. We're doing one. We're doing a mini pod of Black Christmas. The third iteration of a Black Christmas movie.
Yes, 1974.
I think 74 was the first one, which I have not seen.
The original. I have seen it many times. And 2006, which I've seen once. And
I think I saw that.
Never want to see that again.
Yeah, I think that was bad.
And while this is called Black Christmas, I will say this is definitely its own. It has kind of that Black Christmassy feel in that there's a sorority house. It's set around Christmas. There's a killer.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not like the original movie or the remake.
Yeah.
This is a different story altogether.
We have your typical setup. Yes. The there's a college. It's something Hawthorne.
It's like Hawthorne University.
Hawthorne, yeah. It may be the guy's full name. I think it starts with a C. But they're at this university and they're going home. A lot of people are going home for Christmas break, but some are staying behind.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat, we notice okay, there's some murdering going on.
Yeah.
So the main character here is played by Imogene Poots, plays mm-hmm. Riley. We find out that something has happened to her with, mm-hmm. at a frat before.
Yes.
And the movie starts this whole like, oh man, campuses are terrible. Campuses are awful.
Yeah.
Like there's just nothing but misogyny and rape and yep. sexual assault and all these things going on. It's like the worst university ever.
Yeah. Hawthorne College, by the way.
Hawthorne College. But I was trying to figure out who that dude's name was that the Hawthorne came from. She's a part of a sorority and they're getting ready to do some sort of like Christmas festivities and things like that. And I don't know how far to get into this because start getting into spoilers like almost immediately.
This is a hard movie to talk about without spoilers. I will. It's Caleb Hawthorne.
Caleb is the guy.
He's the founder. There's a whole thing at the beginning where we find out that, this is really interesting because the college that you and I went to, I think this happened maybe right before we got there. There was a bust or something above like the university center
mm-hmm.
of Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Right.
And it had actually gotten removed because of some people, they had a petition.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
there's something similar in this where this Caleb Hawthorne apparently might have not been the best person. I think one character even says, you know, he owned slaves in the North.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so there's this whole thing you find out at the beginning. There was a petition. They removed this bust of his from wherever it was showing on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're trying to do another petition where they're trying to get this woman is doing another petition. This is actually the Lily Donahue character? The actress. This is the character's name is Chris,
mm-hmm.
Elise Shannon,
yeah.
Who is really good, actually. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything.
No,
else.
I haven't either.
But she's got another petition going where she's now trying to get this professor fired, played by
Carrie Elways.
Yeah, Wesley
yep.
from Princess Bride. So that's kind of the stuff that's going on at the beginning. And then they're going to this frat party. The four of the girls are performing a song for the fraternity and other sororities, I guess. And it starts off as kind of like what seems like this innocent, just like goofy, like, I can't remember what the song they're taking off on now.
Yeah, I can't either. But, they played it like 40 times.
Yeah, I know. But it starts off like it's about like them being sexual and being silly and all that kind of stuff. And then it kind of turns itself around to where they're actually, they start basically calling out the frat for being a bunch of date rape assholes. So that's all kind of what happens at the beginning after we have like our opening, you know, kill scene or whatever, which a lot of these slasher films have. And then, yeah, shit just gets a little a little crazy after that.
You have this undercurrent of you know, you have this undercurrent that could serve well for a horror movie. I just don't think they do much with it.
Okay, yeah, we're gonna see. This is what I was saying. I don't really know. I'm having a hard time grading this movie. I think this movie is really interesting. I've seen, I don't even know how many slasher films at this point in my life. This is one of the most unique slasher films I have ever seen. I mean, this is like, this would be like in almost like Happy Death Day territory as far as the way they approach it. This movie, like, and we'll get into this more in spoilers. This movie wears its heart on its sleeve. It makes it very clear there's a lot of messaging in this movie. I kind of respect the fact that they don't pull back from that. It's just like, here you go. And a lot of that makes this kind of approach to a slasher film interesting to me. I didn't like a lot of the execution though. So that's why I'm struggling. Like I would totally watch this again. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. So,
give me your letter grade.
I'm going to do a B-.
Okay.
I'm somewhere in that C+, B- range. I think there's a lot of bad stuff in this. We're going to talk about this. There are a lot of issues. Like I said, the execution's not great. In some areas, although I do think Sophia Takal directed it. I think she's a really interesting filmmaker. I would love to see something else she did. She actually did a movie before this called Always Shine, which has been on Shudder. I've never watched it, but it's always been kind of on my radar. I might have to check that out now because I'm really curious other stuff that she's tackled, and I'm looking forward to what she does next. But I don't know. This movie's interesting, but I kind of want people to see it. So I'm doing a little slight recommend.
Okay. I don't think I can.
I hear you.
I think that it has that's the thing that is hard about this is that there's a good message that they're trying to, there's sort of a thing that they're trying to shine a light on. I just wish they had done more with it. And I don't think they did. And we'll get into that in spoilers, but I'm going to give this a D.
Okay.
It's just one of those movies where I'm like, I really want to like this. And there's this undercurrent that could really serve the movie well. And I feel like they just completely failed on that and could be one of those things that I'm just, maybe I'm just missing something. It's very possible. After one time you watch something, you may not get the big picture on this and everything, but I thought that they failed essentially that.
Yeah. It's weird. Like I said, sometimes I have a hard time cause there are movies out there. I think that even if, Jumanji, was kind of like this in a completely different way, but like there are movies out there that even if they don't work completely as a movie, you have a lot of issues with it from a storytelling standpoint or execution or whatever it is, there's still enough there like that's interesting to you that you can kind of like, you're not giving it a pass, but it's enough to where you're kind of like, I kind of want to let other people, I kind of want to see what other people think about this. It's weird. Like I'm giving it a B-, but I don't know how good it is.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so I don't know. It
wasn't like I was sitting
about.
There watching this going, man, I really want to get out of here. It was more about the execution like you're talking about.
Yeah.
I was like, this could be really good. Like, this is something that if it pays off, I will love this, and I don't think it paid off.
And I can see, and there's a very specific thing I don't like about the end, which, I don't know. You just want to talk about spoilers?
Yeah, I was going to get into spoilers for this movie.
Kevin Spacey as Kaiser Soze.
He's Luke's what? Father is actually Darth
He's
Vader.
What?
She's the sister and the daughter. They just
No. I'm reading the books.
Okay, I hate that this becomes a supernatural thing.
Yeah.
I really hate that. That completely I don't know if it took I mean I was probably already a little out of it, but I just the supernatural aspect to it, and it's not if you wanted to do that, I just don't think they handle it well. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, okay, so what you find out, I guess I'll just throw this out there, what you find out is that, now, from the first kill, I knew there had to be multiple killers.
Mm-hmm.
Either there has to be multiple killers, or they're just not doing a very good job. It's like disappearing.
Yeah, there's no way that these characters can do what they're doing.
Because, like you have this scene where, and it's in the trailer, actually, where the girl, God, I cannot remember her name. She's only in that one scene, so it's really probably...
Was it Lindsay is her character name?
That sounds right. Yeah, Lucy Curry. There's a picture of her from the movie. So yeah, it's Lindsay. So like, she's on the phone maybe with Riley. I don't know. She's on the phone with somebody from the sorority just saying, yeah, I'm headed to my car. I'm going to be heading home for the holidays. And so she's headed out. This guy is following her. And so you think he's the one, you know, she's really concerned because this guy's following her. And even though, and this is one of those dumb things horror movies do sometimes, especially slasher films, where it's fine that he ended up just being somebody going somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
but it's insane, like how he's walking behind
how close
her.
Behind.
Oh,
he keeps looking up and like smiling.
Yeah.
And all this. And I don't write sins during watching these movies like this, but like there was one right there that I thought of. I was like, even if this guy turns out to be completely benevolent, he's still a creeper.
Something's wrong with that guy.
Yeah. I mean,
so he takes off in the other direction. But then when she turns around, there's a guy in a cloak and a black mask.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets away from him, or he just disappears basically. And then then he's back. And then she turns around, she finds a weapon, she turns around, he's gone again.
Mm-hmm.
Then she goes and knocks on the door, and he answers the door.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, you're like, there's no way. I mean, this is, at the very least, it's two people.
Mm-hmm.
But what you end up finding out is it's this whole fraternity. And what it is, which this is kind of interesting, depending on how you look at this. But so the Chris character, the Elise Shannon character, who's like, I guess, the secondary character in this movie, she's... Riley in the Imogen, is it Imogen?
Yeah, I think it's either Imogen or Imogen. Yeah.
But she's Riley's, like, one of her best friends, and they're in the sorority together, and they're kind of the two main characters, I would say, from that standpoint. So you find out, so she got the bust removed, but they took the bust to this fraternity. And then when they took it to the fraternity, I guess they found out that it had, like, magical powers.
Yeah, it has some sort of weird black ink. Of course, it's always black ink. Yep. It's always goo. It's always black ink.
Yeah, I almost thought they were going to go, like, in alien territory, you know? So they find out that I guess this black goo makes them stronger and makes them, like... Although I didn't really get the impression that these guys were... Because they do fight them. And the girls fight the guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like they can't fall down.
Yeah.
And anyway, so this supposedly makes them stronger. So, and I guess it kind of possesses them. And there's some weird scenes early on that make sense later, I guess, because one of the girl, Lily Donahue, plays a character named Marty, also does a very good job. She has a boyfriend that's hanging out with them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He starts getting like these crazy headaches.
Yeah.
You know, you're not even thinking about it at the time. And mm-hmm. he's just kind of being a dick all of a sudden when he wasn't before.
Right.
And so you find out that like this stuff, although I don't know how he was being affected by
it. I don't either.
At the sorority house, but whatever. But anyways, this black goo or whatever somehow affects the guys. And essentially, Cary Elwes is the Professor Gelsing character. He decides that they should just create this army of rich fraternity, you know, kids that go around and kill the women that are in their way, and take back America
and try to take back America and try to recruit. This is where I thought the premise could have been good. They try to recruit other women who will be subservient, and we find out that there's one who has done that.
Yes,
but only one.
That was kind of a nice twist.
It's a great twist, but it should be more.
Yeah, I agree.
What I'm trying to say is that at the very beginning of this movie, now at the very beginning of the movie, Cary Elwes is in his class, and he says, he's talking about this writer who's talking about women who should be just subservient and everything.
Yes.
And so he asks Riley what she thinks, and she says, "Well, I think this writer, he blah 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 blah," and he goes, "How do you know it's a he?"
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that the writer he's talking about is a woman, and I was like, "Oh, well, that would be a good foreshadowing to the fact that this is not men doing this; this is all women doing this, and these are women who don't." These are women who feel like women should be subservient and everything.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought we were about to get. And I thought that was going to be a great twist to this whole thing, was that, yes, these guys are assholes. Yes, they're the prime suspects in all of this. But it would be really, really awesome to see, you know, there are women out there who are not for that.
And that's the case. I mean, we see that in real life today.
We see that all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, not to this extreme where there's... you know, I don't know, possessed murderers and they're following them.
So I think I would have, I hate doing this to movies, but I don't think I would not have put the supernatural in there. I would not have made it the frat. I would have made it a rival sorority of some sort that was the killers.
Yeah, that would be great.
I think that would have been perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And you can still have this undercurrent of all the things you want to talk about, what's going on campuses today, because that doesn't absolve the men at all. It just makes them not killers. I mean, you know, you change up the killers and you change up their motives for killing.
Yeah.
And I thought that's where we were headed. And I was really excited about that.
Yeah.
In fact, this movie was probably leveling around where I was for you, where it was a B or B minus or whatever, because I was like, I'm kind of getting into the vibe of this and everything. But then once all the stuff, like, oh, it turns out that, oh, the assholes in this movie really are the fucking killers. I just threw my hands up in the air and go, what's the point then?
Yeah, and I mean, and I get the impression just from what I've read about this. I think Blumhouse, who's the, you know, Jason Blum is the executive producer behind this. I think he just let the director, you know, he let her do whatever she wanted. I didn't feel that there was like studio interference here or anything. But I do think maybe at some point, though, she's like, it's kind of one of those weird things where, and this is why it's so hard to like insert messages into your movies like so intentionally. Because I think at some point, though, you've still got to make the movie. And it's like the movie is just fighting with itself. Like, it doesn't want to be a slasher film, I think, for about half of it. Like, it really doesn't want to be one. But that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if just changing the title would have made a difference. Although, I will say, I don't have a problem with them calling this Black Christmas. A, more people are going to see it because it's called Black Christmas. Mm-hmm. But also, it does have that kind of feel to it, even if it's not the same story. And honestly, if you're going to do a remake or a new version of a movie, I mean, this is kind of something more I'd like to see, where you're doing something different with it. I don't need to see them being attacked by this guy that calls himself Billy, and, you know, which is what the other two were doing. But yeah, I think where this movie struggles is when it tries to be. When it tries to be a slasher movie, and then especially with them introducing that supernatural element, it just, I don't know. That's just weird.
And I think what you mean by a slasher movie is the killer is somewhere and kills a random person or someone who like had an ancillary sort of connection to the movie as it gets closer and closer to our main characters and everything. Not necessarily. I think a lot of times when I hear slasher movie, I immediately think, oh, you must mean like blood everywhere. And,
yeah, no.
And
in fact,
it doesn't really mean that.
It's PG-13.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely, that's an interesting thing too. A lot of people complained about that when they found out that it was getting a PG-13 rating. But honestly, I forgot. I mean, if you had told me this was R, I mean, I probably would have believed you because, I mean, people are getting like shot with arrows, and I mean, maybe you don't see blood, but it's definitely violent. And there's actually, I don't mean that in an insulting way, because there's a lot of great slasher movies. I mean, some of my favorite movies, Halloween, and you know, the original Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of really good slasher. The original Black Christmas is great. I don't mean that as a negative. I just mean I feel like this movie wants to be something else, and I'm okay with that. But then when it gets back into these slasher elements, it kind of loses a little bit of focus. I will say though, I would love to see her do another horror movie. I think she directs some of these scenes really well. The stuff where they find out there's someone in the house with them, some of that is really well done. Mm-hmm. The guy with the bow and arrow, you know, is going around. They don't know exactly where he is. There's some stuff in there that's really well done. There's a few other kill scenes and stuff that are pretty interesting, but it's just when you find out what's going on. And at one point I'm like, it has to be supernatural. There's no other way to explain this. And then I started kind of like getting a little irritated.
Well, yeah. And if you can, have this movie without it being supernatural, yeah. Like it almost feels like
your suggestion
almost. Well, yeah. And even if you're not going to do my suggestion, it would be nice to just, just to say that these guys are assholes and are going to do asshole things.
Yeah.
And, it could have, you know, they could have had a variety of reasons for why they were doing what they were doing. I just found that unsatisfying asshole, the Cary Elwes, who by the way, is always the surprise killer every time he's in the movie.
True.
I mean, every time you see that guy, you're like, oh man, this motherfucker is going to be the killer in the end, isn't he?
But I mean, then once they get into the supernatural, I think it gets problematic because then all of a sudden there's these rules that get set that don't even really make any sense. Like they have, well, first off, I don't understand why all these guys are involved in the killings when clearly they look like they had some demonic version of Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was like a bigger dude that was the main killer.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he just
the king?
Why wouldn't he just be the one killing everybody?
Yeah.
Because he was like undead or something.
Yeah, you could just make it they have brought him back to life like a vampire.
There was the whole thing where they had to give the items.
Yeah.
And then that becomes confusing because like if that's the case, then, you know, how is Elise Shannon still out there? And there's a couple other people that are still out there that clearly they had items on that tray. And then all of a sudden the character that ends up actually being with them, the girl that ends up being with them that we think has been killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden she has an item on that tray and she's like, where did that come from? And it's like, why did you even need to do that?
Yeah.
You could have just said, hey dude, kill her.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand how any of that mattered.
Yeah.
And, but the movie brings it up. So then I'm asking questions like, well, why does this matter? And you're not telling me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just stuff like that started really irritating me. But the positives, like I said, this movie digs into a culture, very aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a-okay with this. I feel like this movie feels like a group of people that are just fed up.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just basically like just screaming at you.
And that's why I want this movie to be better than it is, because it's exactly the type of thing like that, you know, it's important to have a movie like this. It's just that I think you're tapped right into it. Once it gets into that whole supernatural thing, and for me, just the fact that the guys who are the assholes end up being the killers, and there's no surprise to this at all.
Yeah.
Means there's really, I feel like I've wasted my time.
Yeah. I mean, I kept thinking like maybe the, Riley meets a guy about, I don't know, 30 minutes into the movie who ends up seeming to be like a nice guy or whatever. And he ends up being
He is.
Like, he gets possessed.
Yeah.
But in fact, there's a really funny moment where after all that's said and done, he's like, I'm so sorry. You know, there was that bust and the demon. She's like, not the time.
Yeah.
Oh, and another thing about hold on. I want to go back to the female empowerment part. So, it wasn't even like the big stuff. Like there's the big scene in the fraternity where they're singing the song and it goes from them being all like cute and sexy and like saying, we're going to have sex later to, you know, you raped me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's a big moment. Like we're hitting you over the head right now with this message. But then even at the beginning, like you can totally from the get go, you can tell a woman directed this and a woman wrote it because just the conversations they're having in the sorority, the difference between this version and like you go back and watch the Bob Clark version,
mm-hmm.
which is very good, but just the conversations the women are having are so different.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just I don't know if that was like a diaphragm or whatever they were talking about with that girl that walks in and says, "Hey, I lost my whatever," and she's like, "Oh, here's one."
Yeah, she said her
something cup.
Her yeah, it's her God, what does she call it? It was, I know what you're talking about, but
and I know I'm gonna sound like an idiot when I said I'm sure it had nothing to do with it. I just was throwing something out.
Yeah,
there,
it was it's not a diaphragm because. Riley gets something out of her drawer and gives it to her, which
and
I, you know,
and she sticks it down her pants, right? But it was still, I'm just saying, like, the way they're interacting, like, that felt like two women talking,
mm-hmm.
you know. I liked like the dialogue that was going on, like, early on in the movie, and that's a much smaller thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was like, oh, this is really, you know, like, and I was like, you know, it's one of those things where. There's women that direct horror movies, but specifically slasher films. I can only think of like two movies mm-hmm. that have even been directed. I'm sure there's more, but I can only think of two that people know. Like Slumber Party Massacre was directed by a woman, and I believe written by a woman. And then Freddy's Dead was directed by Rachel Talley.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been written by a man though. I don't know, but the like just off the top of my head, I can't even think of more than those two.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously very rare. And while watching this, I was like, that's a really interesting, cause there's been so many slasher films, and slasher films are a hard subgenre to do something different with.
Mm-hmm.
So when you actually get something brought to it, that's a little more unique, that's always fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked stuff like that. And I, like I said, I obviously the message is great, even if it is beating you over the head. I think sometimes we need to be beat over the head.
No, I'm totally fine with the message being beat over our head. I was totally fine with it being more text than subtext.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's a shame to me because I feel like some people in this world will watch this and say, see, that's what happens when you have a woman director. When there are hundreds of millions of movies out there that are directed by men that are way worse than this.
Yeah.
And we don't even bat an eye.
I mean, I know I've said stupid things. I'm sure. I know I have. I have sisters, and I mean, they'll call me out. Like, you know, I was like, I know you didn't mean that the way you said it, but that was really dumb. Mm. And that was really insensitive. You know, so I mean, I get that. But like, guys are so stupid. Something recently I saw was when the Golden Globe nominations came out,
mm-hmm.
and there were female journalists and critics and even, you know, actresses and stuff or actors that were saying, you know, no female directors got nominated. Mm-hmm. I saw multiple tweets, mostly always from dudes. Well, what if we had what if we just had a female directed category? Like that, holy shit. Like you're a dumbass.
Yeah.
Like just, how does that help anything?
It's just bottom of the barrel stupid. It just doesn't make any sense, you know. What did you just say? What did you say? Something that made sense? I don't even acknowledge that shit.
I know. And there's this great part in this movie too, where which I guess we're supposed to assume the girl's boyfriend is maybe somehow being possessed, like across the way. But he starts going off about like not all of us are rapists and not all of us are bad guy. And then the Elise Shannon character is like, you know, did you just give me a not all men?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, and I get that too, because I see that, and like people will tweet something like, God, you know, men suck.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and clearly, like, and then you'll see always in the comments, well, I don't. Like, you're an idiot.
Yeah, nobody cares. Yeah, nobody cares whether you are or
and
not.
And you have no idea what that kind of day that person's having. You have no idea why that tweet happened. I mean, you know, it's like you just don't know anything, but you just feel the
it's
need.
It's just that
to
it's not
interject.
Helping.
Yeah.
It's not helping.
Yeah. It's just, it's so weird.
All you're doing is saying, like, compared to these people you're talking about, look at me. I'm better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, fuck you.
And so I think I loved scenes like that because I thought that opened up a dialogue that was really interesting and was different. Different is not something you see in a lot of movies, be it a horror movie or not. But then, like you're saying, but then if you have to judge it as a horror movie or as a slasher film, it falls apart, especially at the end.
Yeah.
And also at the end, I thought it was interesting because like it's a lot of slasher films do this, a lot of horror movies do this, a lot of movies do this, I guess, where you know they lock all the guys, they board the doors or whatever, lock all the guys in the fraternity, and it's burning down.
Mm-hmm.
So they've essentially just killed. Like 50 guys, mm-hmm. like they've just murdered all these people. And I remember thinking like after it ended, it just ends like on Riley's face or whatever, you know, watching the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I guess after this is when they all go to jail.
Yeah, because how they explain this.
You're never going to be able to explain that.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be some things you could say, but I don't know how you're going to get out of. I just
All there was
I just trapped a bunch of dudes in a house and killed them.
All there was one call to the police that there was an assault taking place at one of the sorority houses, and that's all they know.
And he got killed.
Yeah.
You know, that was another kind of fun moment where you thought the security guy was going to the girls.
Yeah, yeah.
But he went to a different sorority house, and they were getting, you know,
and they were already in the middle of murdering some guys.
And that was a great little moment. I just wish there had been more moments. I wish they had played with it.
And that could
more.
Have been a giant, awesome reveal, too.
That's true.
In fact, I thought that, again, my head was still in the space of this is where it was going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when he opened the door and we saw the chicks murdering people and everything, I was like, oh, but it's because they're murdering the other killers. They're not murdering because they're murderers. They're just, you know. So I really, when I first saw him open the door, I was like, yeah, that's what we're going for right there. Oh, there's these guys in uniforms. I get it.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay. And there's also, and I actually, like, there's a really good moment. The first time we're introduced to that character, Riley thinks that something's going on. She thinks that Helena, who ends up actually being the girl that is in on it with them or is subservient, you know.
Yeah.
She thinks that she's missing. And so she goes to campus security and just be like, and they're getting these weird texts. That was the other thing. They're getting these texts from an account that says, what did we say his name was? Caleb
Hawthorne. And yeah, it's like some Yip Yap app of some sort.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like really just aggressively like, you know, horrible things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like,
going to see if you're ready to fight tonight. Or
yeah.
And
yeah.
That.
Stuff like that. And, so she goes to the security guy and like, it's a weird moment because you know that like so many women have been in this moment and it's terrible because it's like he's just not taking her seriously.
Yeah.
And like, and part of it I think is like he just doesn't want to be bothered. He wants to eat his
sandwich.
His
nasty ass mayonnaise whatever sandwich.
That was enough to get it an R, I think. That scene alone.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
he put so many packs of mayonnaise on it.
Might
there.
As well have been cum.
And he's even talking to her. He's like eating the sandwich. Mm-hmm. Oh, that scene was so gross.
Yeah.
But that was a really interesting moment too, where you can see her getting fed up. And Imogen Poots is a really interesting actress. She's in stuff. I mean, she pops up. I believe she was in Green Room.
28 Days Later was the one that I remember being in. Or was it 28 Weeks Later? It's 28 Weeks
28
later.
Weeks Later, I believe. And she's in the Fright Night remake. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That might have been one of the first time. Well, yeah, I guess 28 Weeks Later was. Maybe
that was the first time I remember her in, but she could have been in some other stuff too.
And her name stands out, just
right because
sadly.
Well, and it, yeah, it's unfortunate because it's only here in I believe North America that Poots.
Oh yeah,
has the connotation of farting, whereas everywhere else it's just a normal name.
But she's really good, and I didn't even realize it was her. I thought I had seen the actress before, but at that time I hadn't looked up who was in it.
Usually she's glammed up pretty good.
Yeah, but she kind of almost had like a, in a weird way, like she kind of reminded me of Scarlett Johansson. Like, I don't know, maybe it was just the hair.
Yeah, like the old Ghost World days maybe or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But I thought all the acting was, I mean, the women, I thought they were all perfectly fine. Some of the like the douchebag frat guys seemed a little stereotypical,
but I think they were
supposed to be.
Yeah.
And Cary Elwes, he's interesting.
Yeah.
His Harvard professor.
I always forget that he's from England.
Yeah.
And so when he's doing an accent, it always still feels affected for some reason. I don't know why that is, but every time he's talking in a scene, he does these things like this.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, he's always got these affectations that I'm like, I like this guy, but he's always in these movies where he has to play something weird in some like.
Yeah, because like, I think like Kiss the Girls, isn't he like from Atlanta or something?
Yeah.
And then Liar Liar, he's just
he's
such
a
white bread.
He's just a
American.
Dumbass. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, Wesley is always going to be his biggest and most awesomest role.
He actually wrote his autobiography is actually really good. And what's the line from Princess Bride?
As you wish.
I think that's what the book's called. Mm-hmm. It's something like that. But if you just look up Cary Elwes, you can find the book, and it's really interesting. And most of it, he's talking about playing Wesley, and it's just, I don't know, it's a really, really interesting autobiography.
Yeah. But ever since then, it seems like everything I've ever seen, he shows up in Hot Shots.
Oh, yeah.
And he's sort of the adversary in that, even though he's not really he's not a villain.
He's kind of the Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer. But you know, every time he shows in Saw, you know, Saw's another one.
Totally. It's Danny Glover.
Yeah. Danny Glover.
Who we just talked about in Jumanji.
Even in Saw, you know, he comes back by the end of that. He enjoys what Saw does, and he wants to carry on Saw's work and everything by the end of that franchise.
This is totally off the subject, but I don't. This is a Cracked article. Apparently, they did some list. It was like, it was something about interesting things you didn't know about these movies or fan theories that were proven true.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I read this.
Yeah, there was a fan that actually guessed that Cary Elwes was going to be like a big part of the movie, of the franchise at the end. And sure enough, in the last movie,
and the article was like, we don't know if the Saw writers just saw this and thought it was a great idea or what.
Because I even think like if I remember correctly, the guy or woman, I don't remember, even got details right. There were things about why he was involved and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. That was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, no, that was.
But
awesome.
he's not really given much to do in this. I mean, it's a really short movie.
That's the problem with the Cary Elwes stuff. Every time he's in movies nowadays, is they give him this. Like, it's hard to take him seriously just the way they make his characters a lot of times. And of course, then you throw in that just odd affectation he has that I can't put my finger on.
Well, and you're also, it's one of those characters where even though he's obviously got to be involved somehow, it's like they don't want you to think he is. So, you know, they give you, so you have that really weird scene outside of the fraternity, why is he even there? Which I guess he's there because he's involved.
Well, and he's got this list of women that we find out later, or women who need to be taught a lesson.
When I saw that, I just assumed, oh, well then he's a red herring. Like, he can't be the killer.
Well, what they were going for. They were trying to make these guys so evil and wrong that they had, that we were misdirected. Yeah. But,
and that's the thing. And if they were going this route, and it was so clear that these guys sucked, I think part of the problem too is that they still try to make it a mystery. And I almost think if they had given away some of that earlier on, it might have worked better.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a problem that some even non-horror movie mysteries struggle with, because you have to have characters act so odd.
If they had stood back a bit from this script and really thought about this.
Yeah.
They would have realized that the surprise isn't all that interesting. The surprise being who we find the killers out to be or whatever. And they would have, and you've done probably like what you're saying there, where it wouldn't have been, we would just take the surprise element out of it.
Yeah. Because there are slasher films that aren't mystery. I mean, the original Halloween is not a mystery. Right. You know, it's Michael Myers the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, the later Friday the 13th movies aren't mysteries, you know, for the most part. Nightmare on Elm Street. So, I mean, you don't necessarily, it doesn't have to be a whodunit.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's what this movie was trying to be. And then it kind of turned into something else. And it was just a really weird shift. And I guess you shouldn't review movies and talk about what they should have been. But I think that's a problem here. I think it's just an issue here.
Well,
it
just feels like they come up with ideas that you expect to pay off in some certain way. And then it just doesn't. And so then you're like, oh, I thought they were going to do this. And even though you predicted it would have been satisfying had they done that thing that you predicted.
Yeah, and the fact that we're talking about other possibilities, I was even going to say that the character that she meets, the guy, all of a sudden his name escapes me, but the guy she meets about, the music guy, not even seeing, Landon, right? Is that him?
Is that the good guy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Caleb Eberhardt played him. He was also in, looks like he was on the Defenders. He played a young man on the Defenders on Netflix.
Okay.
But anyways, Landon, you know, he shows up. Like, you know, I was actually thinking for a second, I'm not going to be shocked if he ends up being the
killer.
Well,
yeah, and that's another one of those things where you set up a character as the nice guy. And a lot of people who think of themselves as the nice guy are actually demons.
Yeah.
Like when you give them a chance.
Yeah.
And
that's what I'm saying. And if they had made him the sole killer, I don't think this movie would have been any different. Maybe it would have even been better. But then that's a problem, too, because then you're like, so they're, well, it doesn't matter who the killer is, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, whatever you did. And I just feel like a lot of these other options would have been better than what they went with.
I agree.
I don't know. And they even do that thing with Landon. They have that dumb moment. They always do this crap, too, where he just happens, like, she's going to see the campus security guy, and he just happens to be there. Or she's, like, at the library or something.
Yeah.
And he just happens to be there. And rightfully so, she's like, why are you here?
Yeah.
And have you been? And I will say, I liked that. Like, the women, for the most part in this movie, are very smart. Like, mm-hmm. I think, because Riley from the get go is like, something's off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's off, but something's off.
Yeah.
And so she's going around and trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And I liked that. I liked that about that. That's what's making me somewhat recommend this.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, and I think people that watch a lot of horror movies like I do, or watch a lot of slasher movies, or maybe don't even watch that many slasher movies because they just feel like they're all the same. This is definitely different. I mean, at least as far as like the setup and stuff, the endings, you know, kind of goes into some familiar territory.
Guess this would be interesting to see what the final girls say about this, right?
Yeah.
Those type of podcasts. Let's see what they
think. Like Horror Virgin or something. I'd be really curious to see what Todd thought about this. I don't think they're covering it this year, but I think I asked them. But I'd be really curious to hear what they had to say. And I've even, there's a few people on Twitter, Patrick with Modern Horrors, you know, he was asking me about it and he's going to go check it out. Like, I'm really curious what people like that are going to think about it, like mm-hmm. the horror guys. And it's gotten like, I mean, as of last night, it was like, and this was only like 20 something reviews. It was like 46%, which I was actually thinking that's not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because clearly, like, some people are liking it. And most of it's, like, what I'm saying. Like, it's so just, like, I don't want to say it's batshit crazy, but it's just so different. Like, it's just that whole, the approach of, like, this very, like, I don't want to say feminist approach, but just this female approach, female-centric approach to a slasher film is just so different. Even though, typically, the main characters are women in these movies.
Yep.
This feels very different.
And
I love that, but I just don't know that I like the movie.
Yeah. The IMDb has it at a 3.0, but after, I think what we'll see happen with the IMDb rating is by the weekend, it'll probably be at like 5.6.
Yeah, I think
5.7,
so.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, I even tweeted about that last night, about the toxic reviews on IMDb are up.
Yeah. Because those people, you can't judge... You can't judge the rating after the first night, and you can't really judge it after the first weekend. There are movies, I swear to God, I saw years ago mm-hmm. that were in the 6 point whatever, and now I look at them and they're at 7.6 or something like that.
Yeah, it definitely changes. And I will say, sadly, because I noticed this when we reviewed Hustlers, and ever since then, because I remember going on IMDb to look up something, I'm like, why is Hustlers like a 4.0? I'm like, it's not the greatest movie ever, but it's not bad.
It's not 4.0.
Yeah, and it's probably gone up since. But then I read the reviews, and I'm sorry, it's a lot of guys, and I don't even know if they've seen the movie. And are just being like, oh, this left-wing, you know, female bullshit.
Right.
That's it. And so, like, I've always been curious. Like, so Charlie's Angels was the same way when it came out. And now this. It's just gross.
To go where you're saying there, I saw that same IMDb rating, by the way, that night we saw that. 4.0 on the IMDb. It's right now, it's at a 6.4, which is average.
That's pretty fair.
Yeah.
Like, I would say that's pretty, I mean, it might be, I might consider it a little higher than that, but I still, for IMDb, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's kind of like horror fans. We always joke about IMDb. Like, if it's a horror movie, if it's got at least a 5.0, it's probably fine.
It's probably a classic.
Because horror movies get really low ratings.
I've seen that many times. When we had Modern Horrors on here a couple of times, and they would bring up all these movies, and they were like, this is great.
Yeah.
I would go, and I'd be like, okay. Before I'd watch the movie, I'd go and look at the IMDb rating. I'm like, the movie they're saying is great has a 4.8 on IMDb. What the hell are they talking about? But then I would watch it,
yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, yeah, This isn't 4.8.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, I don't, like, I, and I know there's probably a lot of great people that write reviews on IMDb, so I'm definitely not trying to, like.
Not many.
Yeah. Probably not. Mm-hmm. Trying to be nice. Yeah. But I feel like it's a lot of, it's a lot of fanboys. And probably more, like, superhero fantasy type fanboys. Yep. Those are the ones writing reviews.
Well, that's the reason why, like, in an Endgame, yeah. You look at the IMDb rating after the first night, it's always like 9.5 or something like that.
I'm sorry, but I don't know that I give a shit what the release the Snyder Cut thinks about Charlie's Angels. But you get a lot of crap like that. So yeah, so that's all. The IMDb stuff's always just fascinating to me. I gotta quit reading it though, because it starts kind of making me
sad. They're these people. they're the minority in this country, and they think they're the majority, and that's the problem.
Well, and that's the thing, because the majority has no interest in even making any kind of review.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I there's probably a lot of like women out there that don't give a shit what we think about Black Christmas, and that's perfectly fine.
That's
very
true.
It's very fair. I totally get it. They just want to hear what women have to say about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And they should go out, they should gravitate towards the reviews that they like the best.
I even saw some people last night that run, you know, like horror movie websites and stuff, were actually calling for any females that wanted to submit reviews for this movie. And then they were getting chastised. Like one guy who I talked to a lot on Twitter was asked to grow a pair, which that's always a nice.
Yeah.
It's always nice when I'm asked to grow.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. I don't mean to get off on that. But yeah, so so Black Christmas. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't like it. I understand where Jonathan's coming from, and I understand where a lot of people might be coming from on this. Some of you might just like the message in general and just say, who cares if all this other stuff.
Yeah, I just, you know, just like anything like this, I just wish the movie itself had been, I just wish the story had, I don't know, I just wish the movie itself had been a little
I think
better.
They're just story elements they could have developed better and it would have been a better movie, but.
And the supernatural element, I think, is the big thing for me that I just didn't like. I'm not a huge, they make it work with Nightmare on Elm Street, but that's from the get-go. You know that's where they're going.
Yep.
And I feel like if they had maybe had that approach to this, it would have been better.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that we're waiting for like a twist and that ends up being the twist, I was just like, So,
what do you guys think? Go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on SoundCloud, CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We are also on Discord. If you want to get on Discord, go to Reddit. There's a link on the right side of the page there, or you can go to Facebook and private message me, and I will give you one there. Also, you can reach Jonathan at?
I am at SamLoomis13 on Twitter, and you can hear me every week on Behind the Sins with Aaron Dicer and Danae Hughes.
Yes, and so, tell us what you thought. That'll do it for this mini-pod. It's Chris Atkinson and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
I even had speaking of Twitter, I wrote I just made a comment when It Chapter 2 came out. I made a comment like, hey, Ready or Not was out at the same time and wasn't doing great.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked Ready or Not. So I just tweeted out, hey, if your It Chapter 2 is sold out, go check out Ready or Not. And it's a Fox movie, so I guess that made it a Disney movie by the time it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these release the Snyder Cut guys got on there. It's just like, you're just supporting the Mouse House. You don't need to do that shit. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, why do I
just said I liked the movie.
Why do I always have to be supporting something else other than the thing that I said that I like?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's not that you like Ready or Not. It's that you really like fucking Disney.
Yeah.
I mean, makes no sense.
This wouldn't have even been a Disney movie.
Right.
It hadn't been a
well,
buyout.
We really know where your real inclinations lie, and that's with 20th Century Fox.
And to be fair, as someone who goes to Disney World a few times a year, I like Disney. I'm not going to lie, but it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, that's not why I said that about Ready or Not.
Right.
What is that Bob Dylan movie? Todd Haynes directed. Yeah. Have you ever seen that?
Or is it I'm Still Here? I'm Still Here.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Is it good? Or do you have to like Bob Dylan?
Didn't like it.
Okay.
I thought Kate Blanchett was pretty cool playing Bob Dylan for a brief. I mean, a lot of people play Bob Dylan in that movie.
I don't know how much I like Todd Haynes. I just don't know how much I connect to his movies. I like Far From Heaven, I think. Like, I remember liking Far From Heaven. But, like, I remember we watched Safe in you weren't in the Holtz Claw class with me, right? You were in a different one.
I was in a different one, yeah.
Was that, like, film genre?
By the way, it was I'm Not There. There was the Bob Dylan, and then I'm Still Here is the Joaquin Phoenix
thing. Oh, that, yeah, I remember that, too. I never saw that either. Did you see that?
I saw both of those, okay.
That was the Joaquin Phoenix thing.
I knew the secret had not been let out yet.
Oh, that's right. Because he was going to be like a rapper or something.
Yeah, but I knew while watching it, I was like, why would you get Casey Affleck to go around shooting you doing this stuff if it wasn't just a complete put on? You would find somebody else completely to do this if you were becoming a rapper. And like everything in it is just way over the top. And I was like, this can't be real. And
you did that interview with Letterman too. That's like in the documentary, right?
Thanks.
I wonder if Letterman was in on it. He probably was.
Probably. But anyway, yeah, I'm Not There. I saw that and like, yeah, there's a bunch of people just take turns playing Bob Dylan. But they're playing him. They're not playing them as Bob Dylan. They're playing him as a different character who's like Bob Dylan.
Gotcha.
So like, a lot of it was for me. It was just like, oh, the Kate Blanchett part is really cool, and then everything else, I don't remember anything.
Yeah, because I saw Safe in that Holtz Claw class, so that would have been like late '90s. I remember I did not like that. I haven't seen it since.
Yeah, I haven't seen Safe.
That's the one. I think Julianne Moore. She's like a. She thinks she's sick, or maybe she really is sick. I don't know. It's something about chemicals. And then I did not like Velvet Goldmine. That's one of Dave's favorite movies, though. I saw that with Helm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe Far Away. Maybe those are the only three movies of his I've seen.
He did Dark Waters, which is out right
now. Yeah, and I do want to see that. And like Dave didn't like it, but Aaron said it was pretty good. So I'm kind of like, I just don't know if I'm going to have time to go see it in the theater. But it is out. Like, it's out in theaters wide release right now.
He did Carol, which was okay.
Oh, yes. That was definitely okay. Great performances.
And Far From Heaven, which was sort of his Douglas Sirk thing.
Yeah, that's the one, I guess. That's probably my favorite of his, if I had to pick one. But I don't remember much about it.
I don't even remember if I saw it.
I remember it got me to go back and watch some Douglas Sirk, which was interesting. Didn't you see a couple of those in the Holtz Claw class? Because I remember you talking to me about
Written on the Wind.
Written on the Wind. I get that in Inherit the Wind. Inherit the Wind is a Scopes Monkey Trial movie.
Written on the Wind he said, before you watch this, just know that Douglas Sirk did like ridiculous melodrama. Yeah. And I want you to notice the leaves at the beginning of this. So we're like, okay, notice the leaves. And the very beginning of this, Robert Stack is like he's super drunk driving down this road. I think you're going towards this house, and they open the door opens, and there's just leaves just coming into the house, and finding their ways in all sorts of spots in the house and everything. That's all I remember about that.
Yeah, I think I've seen that, and I remember Robert Stack just being really over the top in it. And he did one of the versions, I think, of Imitation of Life. I'm pretty sure I've seen that too. But yeah, that's interesting stuff.